A Tale of Two Cities. It's a historical novel by Charles Dickens, comparing conditions in London and Paris, and foreshadowing the coming of the French Revolution. Just as we have a tale of two cities, we can see emerging from the Bible a tale of two kings. We can see emerging from the Bible a tale comparing King David and King Saul. May I ask you something? What's similar between a left hand and 2 plus 2 equals 8? What's similar between a left hand and 2 plus 2 equals 8? Tim Chua, are you smiling? I think you know the answer. They are both not right. Congratulations, your name is the Hall of Lame. Just as we have made a comparison between a left hand and 2 plus 2 equals 8, we can also make a comparison between David and Saul. However, instead of looking at the similarities between David and Saul, we shall look at the differences. In what follows, I will show that there are 5 key differences between David and Saul. Practical lessons will also be drawn from this study. Throughout the study, I will be referring to scriptural verses to back up what has been said. Let's begin by looking at the first 2 differences between David and Saul. Roman numeral 1. David was God's choice. Saul was the people's choice. David was God's choice. Saul was the people's choice. Roman numeral 2, because it's related. David was chosen by God, but Saul was rejected by God. David was chosen by God, but Saul was rejected by God. Eli, the high priest, and his wicked sons were gone. His God-chosen successor, Samuel, the last of the judges, was an old man. The people had heard all the stories about the days when Israel was a great nation, and about the years when Samuel was at the zenith of his career, during which he subdued the Philistines and judged the land wisely and well. But most of them knew nothing of that personally. They knew only that Samuel was an old man and that he appointed his sons to judge Israel. And what a mistake that was. Let's look at what the Bible says about them in 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 1 to 3. And it came to pass, when Samuel was old, that he made his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second, Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba. And his sons walked not in his ways, but turned aside after lucre, and took bribes, and perverted judgment. As a result, the people wanted something done about it. What they wanted was a king. Actually, Samuel's wayward sons were not the only reason for the demand. The elders of Israel had a summit meeting at Ramah, a place in the hill country about 8 kilometers north of Jerusalem. And it was there that they said, "Samuel, there are 3 reasons we want a king. First, you're old. Second, your sons don't walk in your ways. And third, we want to be like the other nations. So appoint a king to judge us like all the nations." All this took place in 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 5. Now people have always wanted to be like everybody else and to do the popular thing. And the Israelites were no exception. They said, "We are tired of worshipping an invisible God. Everybody says, 'Where is your king?' And we have to say, 'Oh, he is in the heavens.' We want a leader here on earth, Samuel. We want to be like all the other nations. Look at the Philistines and the Moabites and the Jebusites and all the other nations. They all have kings. We want to be like all of them. The Israelites did not say, we want to wait on God to provide what we need. This broke Samuel's heart. So he went to God in prayer about it. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 7 to 8, the Lord replied, hearken unto the voice of the people in all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them, according to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto thee. So God let the people have exactly what they wanted. Saul came on the scene and swept the Israelites off their feet. He was tall and handsome, and the people of Israel chose him to lead them. They thought, wow, Saul's our guy. He'll be a good image for Israel. But before long, Saul became thin-skinned and hot-tempered, and was given to seasons of depression and even thoughts of murder. So much of the man who was the people's choice. In fact, Saul was rejected by God. And Samuel said, because thou, Saul, hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. And Samuel said unto Saul, I will not return with thee, for thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord hath rejected thee from being king over Israel. And the Lord said unto Samuel, how long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I rejected him from reigning over Israel? But graciously, God did not abandon his people. Let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 13, verse 14. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be captain over his people. God has sought out a man after his own heart. In Acts chapter 13, verse 22, David was specifically called a man after mine, God's own heart. Why did God choose David? To answer this question, we need to look first at a New Testament passage over in 1 Corinthians. The context here has to do with the way the Greeks viewed the Apostle Paul. Some of the readers of Paul's letters were Greeks, and they were only looking for a surface impression. One's inner life did not mean a thing to them. The Greeks of that day were influenced by brains and brawn and beauty. In light of this, Paul's whole thrust in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 1 to 5 was, I'm not coming to you with brilliance or human wisdom, and I'm certainly not coming to you with any kind of impressionable physique. Instead, I come in the power of God. And there was a good reason for that. Let's look at what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 26 to 29. For I see your calling, for ye see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, and base things of the world, and things which are despised hath God chosen, yea, and things which are not, to bring to naught things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. What Paul was saying in these particular verses was, look around, Corinthians. You won't find any impressionable people here. Why? So that no one can boast before God. That is a principle we tend to forget because many of us are still a lot like the Greeks. When we look for people to admire, We choose our role models, our heroes. We are often swayed or impressed by things that are cause for boasting. We want the beautiful people, the brilliant people, and the successful people. We want the best and brightest. We are terribly impressed by the surface. The superficial impresses us much more than we would like to admit. But God says, that's not the way I make my choices. So that, in a nutshell, was the reason why God chose David. When God scans the earth for potential leaders, he was not on a search for angels in the flesh. And he's certainly not looking for perfect people, since there is none. He is looking for certain qualities in ordinary men and women, and the same qualities he found in David. These qualities are spirituality, humility, and integrity, which Saul did not possess. This brings us to the third difference between David and Saul. Roman numeral 3. David possessed spirituality, but Saul did not. David possessed spirituality, but Saul did not. The first quality God saw in David was spirituality. As mentioned earlier, the Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. What does it mean to be a person after God's own heart? It means that you are a person whose life is in harmony with the Lord. What's important to him is important to you. What burdens him also burdens you. When he says, go to the right, you go to the right. When he says, stop that in your life, you immediately stop it. When he says, this is wrong and I want you to change, you come to terms with it because you have a heart for God. When you are deeply spiritual, you have a heart that is sensitive to the things of God. 2 Chronicles chapter 16 verse 9 explains it this way. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him. Herein thou hast done foolishly, therefore from henceforth thou shalt have wars. So what is God looking for? He is looking for men and women whose hearts are completely his. That means that there are no locked closets and nothing has been swept under the rugs. When you do wrong, you admit it and immediately come to terms with it. You are grieved over wrongdoing. You are concerned about those things that displease him. You long to please him in your actions. You care about the motivations behind your actions. That is true spirituality. And that is the first quality David had. On the other hand, Saul disobeyed God by taking over the function of the priest. There was further disobedience in 1 Samuel chapter 15 when he did not completely destroy the Amalekites. Samuel confronted him about his sin and said, "What meaneth this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear?" And Saul said, "The people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God." He offered some sort of a justification for his sin by saying it was done for the glory of God. We can never disobey God and say that we are doing it for the cause of Christ or that we are doing it to glorify God. But that was what Saul did, and because of his sin, he was rejected as king. true, David would also disobey God. But the difference between David and Saul was great. David felt the guilt and shame one should feel when they sin. Saul didn't feel it. His conscience was dead to shame and his heart was dead to God. Saul's heart was so dead he could directly disobey God. Someone once remarked, though many times David strayed away from God, yet each time when God spoke to him, he turned back to God. It was just like a compass. You take a compass and try to turn it to any direction, yet it will still point in one particular direction. No matter how David went away from God, he came back to him. No wonder God said that David was a man after his own heart. Roman numeral 4. David possessed humility, but Saul did not. David possessed humility, but Saul did not. When Mark Twain was on one of his lecture tours, he was getting a haircut in a small town. And the barber asked him if he planned to attend the lecture that evening by Mr. Mark Twain. Twain said he thought he might. The barber said, "It's sold out. So if you don't already have a ticket, you have to stand." Twain said, "Just my luck. I always have to stand when that fellow lectures." Twain possessed humility. Similarly, David possessed humility. John F. Kennedy was once asked how he became a war hero. His answer was straightforward and refreshingly honest. "It was entirely involuntary. Someone sank my boat." Kennedy possessed humility. Similarly, David possessed humility. That was the second quality God saw in David. Let's turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 1. "And the Lord said unto Samuel, How long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I've rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill thine horn with oil and go. I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons." God has spotted Jesse's youngest son and said, in effect, "That's my man." Why? Because the Lord saw in David a heart that was completely his. And the boy was faithfully keeping his father's sheep. God saw humility. He saw a servant's heart. Confirmation of this is found in Psalm 78, verse 70. "He chose David, also his servant, and took him from the sheepfolds." And then it says in Psalm 89, verse 20, "I found David, my servant, with my holy oil have I anointed him." It is as if God says, "I don't care about all that slick public image business. Show me a person who has the character and I'll give him all the image he needs. I don't require some certain temperament. I don't care if he has a lot of charisma. I don't care about size. I don't care about an impressive track record. I care about character. First, is the person deeply authentic in his spiritual walk, or is he just faking it? And second, is he or she a servant?" Someone once said, "When you have a servant's heart, you're humble. You do as you're told. You don't rebel and you respect those in charge. You serve faithfully and quietly. But more importantly, he doesn't care about the glory. A true servant's goal is to make the one he's serving look good. A servant doesn't want the one he's serving to fail. He only cares about getting the job done. That was David. God looked at David out in the fields, keeping his father's sheep. He was faithfully doing his father's bidding. And God passed approval on this young lad. While David's brothers were off in the army, making rank and fighting big, impressive battles, David was all alone, keeping the sheep, and he possessed a servant's heart. Napoleon says, "The great ornament of an illustrious life is modesty and humility, which go a great way in the character even of the most exalted princes." John E. Mitchell says, "The great leaders of men in all fields have not been the arrogant and the greedy, but the servants. The real servants are the true nobility, the greatest of all. The Son of God himself declared that he had come not to be served, but to be a servant and to give his life a ransom for many." It is possible to be too big for God to use you, but never too small for God to use you. God created the world out of nothing. And as long as we are nothing, God can make something out of us. On the other hand, although Saul had a measure of humility to begin with, he soon became proud. That he set up a monument for himself shows that he is not the same humble man who once had a humble opinion of himself, 1 Samuel chapter 9, verse 21, and who once hid among the equipment our shyness, 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 22. The pride in Saul's heart reveals the years, the military victories, and prestige of the throne of Israel. Also, as mentioned earlier, Saul took over the function of the priest. He became pumped up with his own importance. And he did not understand why only the priest could carry on the priestly services there at the tabernacle. He presumed to step outside of God's plan for his life. Access to power must be confined to men who are not in love with it. Roman numeral 5. David possessed integrity, but Saul did not. David possessed integrity, but Saul did not. When the citizens of High Wycombe, England, elect a new mayor, the mayor and all his officers are weighed in public, following an ancient custom. Those whose weight is less than, or at least not more than when they took office, are warmly applauded. They have not grown fat at public expense. In other words, they possess integrity. Similarly, David possessed integrity. That was the third quality God saw in David. Look at Psalm 78, verses 71 to 72. "From following the youths great with young, he, God, brought him, David, to feed Jacob, his people, and Israel, his inheritance. So he fed them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands." D. Eisenhower says, "In order to be a leader, a man must have followers. And to have followers, a man must have their confidence. Hence, the supreme quality for a leader is unquestionably integrity. Without it, no real success is possible. No matter whether it is on a section gang, a football field, in an army, or in an office, may I add, or in a nation. If a man's associates find him guilty of phoniness, if they find that he lacks forthright integrity, he will fail. His teachings and actions must square with each other. The first great need, therefore, is integrity and high purpose. God is not looking for magnificent specimens of humanity. God is looking for deeply spiritual people who are genuinely humble and servants who have integrity. Integrity means being totally honest. It is being honest regardless of whether anybody is looking. Macaulay says, "The measure of a man's real character is what he would do if he knew he would never be found out." How exactly did David lead his people according to the integrity of his heart? We do not know for sure, but we can get an idea from the following two statements from Abraham Lincoln, which tell of his integrity leading a war-torn nation. "I desire so to conduct the affairs of this administration that if at the end, when I come to lay down the reins of power, I have lost every other friend on earth, I shall at least have one friend left, and that friend shall be down inside of me. I do the very best I know how, the very best I can, and I mean to keep on doing it to the end. If the end brings me out all right, what is said against me will not amount to anything. If the end brings me out all wrong, then a legion of angels swearing I was right will make no difference." On the other hand, God told Samuel to tell Saul to bring a total judgment against the Amalekites. But Saul did not do this. When Samuel went to meet Saul, Saul said, "I have performed the commandment of the Lord." This shows that Saul was being dishonest. He had no integrity. Today we live in a world that says that making a good impression is all that matters. But we'll never be men and women of God if that is our philosophy. We never will. God is not impressed with externals. He always focuses on the inward qualities. That is, those things that take time to cultivate. In this regard, it is enlightening to look at how God trained David in the qualities of spirituality, humility, and integrity. David's training ground was time. Just hours and hours of taking care of his father's sheep. For nights, he sat alone under the stars. He felt the wind of autumn and the cold rain of winter, and he endured the rays of the summer. Time was one of the teachers God used as he trained David. To sum up, the five key differences between David and Saul are as follows. David was God's choice. Saul was the people's choice. David was chosen by God, but Saul was rejected by God. David possessed spirituality, but Saul did not. David possessed humility, but Saul did not. David possessed integrity, but Saul did not. Do you possess spirituality? Do you possess humility? Do you possess integrity? If you possess spirituality, humility, and integrity, God may actually choose you to be a missionary, a pastor, or a pastor's wife one day, just as God has chosen David. What a privilege that would be. What a privilege that would be. Let's also end this study by looking at some of the practical lessons that apply to our lives today as we walk with God. Firstly, it is in the little things that we prove ourselves capable of the big things. It is in the little things that we prove ourselves capable of the big things. Before entrusting the lives of the entire nation of Israel to David, God first gave him a flock of sheep to tend. If we want to be capable of the big things, we must cultivate the habit of doing the little things well. That is when God puts iron in our bones. That is when God puts iron in our bones. May we be willing to do the little things. May we be willing to do the little things. Secondly, when God develops inner qualities, He is never in a hurry. When God develops inner qualities, He is never in a hurry. When God builds character, He works through time. To develop our character, God may place us in long periods of inactivity and isolation. It's so easy and natural for us to become impatient and restless during these periods. We may even get to the point of questioning God's wisdom. But God is never in a hurry. So we should not be as well. May we never be in a hurry. May we never be in a hurry. Let's pray.